history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, we always come away better than when we started. We're educated, we're entertained, so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This time, we not only get to say thank you to Roger Jensen for his service to our country, we also get to say happy 100th birthday. Roger was born September 12, 1920 in Parlier, California. He's known for his significant contributions to the agriculture industry, which we'll touch on later, as well as his philanthropy. For decades to come, families whose kids are benefiting from treatment at Valley Children's Hospital just outside of Fresno, California, will be able to find peace and comfort in the beautiful Roger and Margaret Jensen Family Chapel. And at his alma mater, Fresno State, an endowed scholarship fund ensures that ag students will benefit from the Jensen's generosity for generations to come. None of that would have come to pass if Roger didn't survive some hairy moments as one of the youngest B-29 pilots in World War II. In fact, Roger has the distinction of dropping the very last bomb on the very last bombing mission before the Japanese surrender. We'll get to all of that, but as always, we like to begin with childhood. So, Roger, I want to know, what do you remember about those days when it was you and your mom and dad and your younger brother?
We sold the ranch where I was born and moved to Selma. My parents were very religious, and they wanted to be close to the Danish Lutheran Church in Selma, and Parlier was just too far to go for them, so they wanted to get in, and that's the reason they sold that ranch and bought a ranch closer to the church. So I had that kind of parental experience of their desires. When I went to Selma High School, I played on their football team. I was selected the player of the year, and unbelievable, I was a center. can you imagine? Anyway, I had a nice bunch of guys, and we had the champion team, and the American Legion at that time made awards, and the American Legion was a pretty strong organization, at least in some of these communities, and Selma was one of them. Mm-hmm. And so they had made out these awards at the advice of the coaches and so forth. And I played in the band.
What'd you play?
I played the tuba.
All right.
But I worked a lot. We lived on North McCall, about a mile north of the town of Selma. I just wanted to get some spending money, and so I went to work at a grocery store there, and I knew that I'd have to work to. We didn't have much money. The family didn't, and so I figured I'd do my own, and so I just did a lot of work. All I did was I did take time to play football. I played, did a little bit of track work, hurdles, but it just took up too much time from my work schedule. So I worked for Justice and Supermarket, headquartered at Reedley.
I'm curious. I know this a long time ago, but I see all the things you've done in your life since then, and I'm wondering, as that boy, did you have some ideas? Hey, when I grow up, these are the things I'm going to do. Did you have some dreams or ambitions?
No.
Had aviation occurred to you at all?
Yes, it had. There was a plane that flew into and landed in an alfalfa field or a flat area that was supposed to be a duplicate of the plane that Lindbergh flew.
Spirit of St. Louis?
Yeah. So my dad said, let's go out and see that plane. So we did, and took a flight in that. So I took a short flight, and it created an interest on my part to fly. But interestingly enough, after the war was over, I was not interested in flying anymore. I just felt I had survived so many trying times with weather and different experiences. The other pilot, for instance, talking about experiences. On our first mission, we had all the, it's dark and we could see the explosions and the other pilot says, let's get out of here, the hell with dropping these bombs. Drop those bombs, let's go, hell. And they actually had to hold him back. And so I go on the bomb run. He chickened out and I never thought he would.
Wow.
You know, and so you just don't know. And on my first crew, the other pilot couldn't fly that. He had a lot of hours, but he just couldn't fly that B-29. And when we were training down in Puerto Rico to be out of sight, boy, he hit that when he was landing. And he just couldn't handle that airplane. And he had a lot of hours with B-17s. He finally just, he just broke down and cried and said, I can't do it.
Mm.
And so they took him up. So he just felt sorry for him. He just said, I can't fly this airplane.
Mm.
So, you know, you see these experiences of personalities that you had exposed to. And I was just too eager, I guess, to quit.
Well, and maybe it takes a, you know, a star high school football player to be strong enough to wrestle one of those. I guess that's something I think a lot of people don't think about, the physical requirements to fly that plane.
Yeah, it was a hard plane to fly to control. And anyway, we survived.
Well, I'm glad you did.
So am I.
Yeah, a lot of people are. I think your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids are real thankful for that. And speaking of, you went to Fresno State.
Yeah.
Is that where you met your wife, at Fresno State?
That's right. I did. I met her there. I met her in 1938, and we were married in 41. And we were married for 76 years before I lost her. I've been very fortunate for a lot of reasons.
What was it about her that made such an impression on you?
For one thing, she had an ag background. Her parents were farmers, and so she'd been raised in an ag environment. She was interesting. She lived in Fig Garden, and she went to Fresno High, and the buses didn't go out this far. So when she was 14 year old, her dad bought her a little Nash automobile to go to school. Different times, you know.
Very different.
And she was just a fun gal, and we hit it off together. There were times when we had our problems before we got married. We'd get upset with each other and so forth. But we'd get back together. And, well, it's just like a marriage. A marriage has its trying times also, and you just work them out. And this present generation, the first time they don't agree, they divorce. They don't go through it as well.
Well, I often ask when I meet someone who had as long of a marriage as yours, what the secret is or what the advice. So for 76 years, you found a way to keep it going, huh?
Yeah, you just work it out.
You graduate from Fresno State in 1941. In fact, I think you said your last semester was up at Huntington Lake at the summer program?
Yeah.
Where there's an awful fire burning right now, the Creek Fire.
Yeah, that's right. I think we've got a cabin up there, and we think it's probably been burned.
Mm. I think most people listening might be surprised to know there was a summer school there that you could take college classes up at 7,000 feet in the Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
What was that like up there?
Oh, it was pretty primitive. There was no enclosed classrooms or anything like that. And there was a restricted curriculum. I needed one program, one to get my degree, and I didn't get it at Fresno State. And they had it available up there, and so that's the reason it was up there. So I ended up, years later, buying property up at Huntington around the property that was owned by Fresno State, where all the apartments and buildings are up there now is on land that we developed.
Oh, wow. You know, something else I don't know if I've ever asked you before, but I'm certainly interested in your answer, because so many of the veterans I've talked to over the years, when it comes to December 7th, 1941, they know exactly where they were and how they found out what had happened at Pearl Harbor. Do you have a memory of that?
Yes. I had gone to Sunday school that Sunday morning. My brother and I had, and so we didn't go to church. We came back to the house, and I picked up a .22 rifle I had. No, it was a .410. And went down in a slough on Manning Avenue right near McCall. There's a big slough there. It was dry, and my brother and I went down there to hunt jackrabbits, just something to do. And so we were hunting those jackrabbits, and so when it came about noontime, we figured we better get back to the car and get lunch. The folks had come back from church. So I got in the car and turned on the radio, and that's how I found out about December 7th, 1941.
And I'm just imagining, knowing where you went to high school in Selma, that you must have had some classmates who were Americans of Japanese ancestry.
I was practically raised with Japanese. I went to school in Parlier for a while. We had more Japanese students in the class than we did Caucasians. We had Japanese people that lived on the ranch and housing we had for them, and I would spend time with them. I'd go down and eat boiled noodles with them. Boy, that was a treat. You know, so I was very friendly with the Japanese. I trusted them. They were good people. They worked hard, and they couldn't own property at that time, so they had to work for somebody. They were really discriminated against.
Well, that's what I was thinking, that, you know, if you've grown up with these people, they're your classmates, they're on the football team with you, they're on the teams you're playing against, that, you know, those few months that followed Pearl Harbor must have been hard to see them deal with what they had to deal with.
Yeah. Just awful. We do some awful dumb things. Hmm. And I'm wondering if we're still doing them.
Well, I'm sure we could find a lot of opinions on that.
Yep, it's a different world.
It is.
Well, our total culture has changed. You know, we got an entirely different culture than what I was raised in. We never thought about locking our homes when we'd leave or leaving something out. It wasn't stolen. It was a different culture.
Well, on that note, is there something you think here in 2020 that we can learn from the time where you risked your life, where 16 million Americans risked their lives in World War II? Is there something from that era you think that would apply to what we're facing today?
I think you've got to appreciate the freedom. It's just, you know, we have more freedom than anybody else in the world, and we've had that privilege, and today it's not as highly accepted as it was in my times. And so, of course, I don't want to get into whether I think people should kneel at all of that. You can imagine how I feel about that. And we've got so many advantages today that we didn't have in those days. The work ethic has changed. Mm. Besides it's just people are just different.
I'm sorry. I know I'm digging in here at different things, but Pearl Harbor happened. And a couple weeks later, you got married? That must have been an interesting time to get married.
Well, we had engaged in September.
Uh-huh.
And we had scheduled to be married in February. And so when the bomb started throwing, he says, well, if we're going to enjoy any married life, we better hurry up and do it. Mm-hmm. And we did. So that's how that happened. Otherwise, we would have been married in February.
And so every single one of those missions, you flew in a B-29. She's back here in the States wondering if you're ever going to make it back.
Yeah.
Was there ever a time where you wondered, where you thought I might not make it back and see her again?
I didn't zero in on that. I mean, I just had faith that the good Lord would be taking care of me.
And we're going to hear some examples of just how that happened. But right now, it's time for our first break. Still to come, the unique path Roger Jensen took to the cockpit of a B-29, some of his experiences in the air, and why he's so thankful for the men who fought so valiantly to secure the island of Iwo Jima. Find photos and a short video of Roger at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, and we'll be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.